Blog Talk Radio.
Your host. A reminder, we do not own the rights to the music you just heard. Also, please click tag and share. Tell someone Let's Talk Fort Worth is on the air. And we're about to speak with two Republicans who say a recount or a redo of the March 1st primary is needed. They feel the failure of the system, the process, the procedure, the training, and the testing, the inability to compare the actual ballot to the computer record, the unknown number of disenfranchised voters, an audit being needed, questions about the tabulators are all reasons to ask for either a recount or a redo of the March 1st primaries. We're going to speak with Jeff Marshall, who ran the GOP chair, and Mr. Mike Brewster. I'm going to open up everybody's phone line along with my co-host this evening. Good evening, Adrian. Good evening, Mike Brewster. And good evening, Jeff Marshall.
Good evening.
Good evening, Carrie.
Okay. Can you hear me, Adrian?
Good evening, Carrie.
Good evening. Well, you know, it's been a very interesting week. It's been very interesting, actually, since the primary. And, Mr. Marshall, I've spoken with you, and I've spoken with Mr. Brewster in the pre-interview, and you all have a lot of very interesting things to say about this election. So let's talk about some of the concerns that you all have. We talked about the failure of the system. Let's talk about that a little bit. What all went wrong with the system in the March 1st primary election?
Well, Carrie, first and foremost, thank you very much for giving us the time and the opportunity to bring this message out to all of the voters, the constituents of Tarrant County. This is a message that really, really needs to be heard as it concerns all of us, regardless of what side of the aisle you're on, Republican, Democrat, or otherwise. So thank you very much for taking this time this evening. When we talk about the failure of the systems, the system itself, the HART InterCivic system, is complex. The complexity of the system is extreme. I liken it to, and I use this analogy frequently, whenever I have a problem with my iPhone, I give it to my 9-year-old granddaughter to figure out. I'm 53 years old, and I can't figure out the complexity of just my iPhone. Now we have a computer system, the HART InterCivic system, that is countywide, that is so complex, it requires intricate training for the poll watchers, the poll judges, the poll clerks, et cetera. The first failure that I witnessed was in that training or lack thereof, using specifically the Southwest Sub Courthouse polling location. I monitored that location as a candidate, pretty much, and we're not just talking about the March 1st primary, we're talking about the early voting as well. The training failure, the specific I have to that is the very first day of early voting, I got a call from one of my poll watchers that says, hey, Jeff, you need to get over here as soon as you can. We're having a problem. Well, I get over there, and my poll watcher comes out and says, hey, look, the duos are – something's wrong. Nobody knows what to do. Well, what we found out, what was happening, if you were in Precinct 2 or Precinct 4 – in early voting, the list of candidates, Republican candidates, was so substantial, the following questions, after you voted for all your candidates, there was a list of 10 questions that you were to vote on also, yes, no, so forth. That in precincts 2 and 4, that would require two pieces of paper to be used to cast your ballot. No one in the Southwest Sub Courthouse location knew this. The problem that came to be was no one knew they were supposed to, say, for example, if Jeff went in there to vote and he was in precinct 2, it was going to require two pieces of paper to cast my ballot. Nobody knew that. The judges didn't know that. The clerks didn't know that. So everybody was being handed one ballot. Jeff Marshall goes up to the duo, puts his ballot in, starts marking his candidates. The ballot spits out. Well, guess what? I needed a second one, but nobody knew that. What was happening was the poll judge, the voter, I would say, hey, I've got a problem over here. The poll judge would come over. They'd say, oh, just insert your ballot again. They would do that. The voter was doing that, inserting that same ballot back in, and then the rest of the vote, the rest of the information was printing to the top of that ballot, thereby spoiling the ballot. This went on all day long. A call was made to Tarrant County Elections that were having this problem. Now, Tarrant County Elections was quick to respond. I'll say that. They were out there the very next morning to address the issues and bring all of the poll workers up to speed on, yes, precincts 2 and 4 are going to need two ballots. This is what you have to do. The point that I'm trying to make in saying all that, the training did not exist. So the very first day of early voting, I happen to know in that location there were 265 Republican voters that cast ballots there that day. The question becomes, how many of those 265 should have had two pieces of paper to cast their ballot, and they never got two pieces of paper? The way the judges would handle it is when it printed the second ballot on the top of the first ballot, they would spoil that ballot, give them another sheet, and have them start over. Well, they did it again. Everything comes out looking fine. They go put it into the scanner, and they're done. 265 times one ballot went into the scanner. Out of that 265, how many of those folks were for precinct 2 or 4 and should have had two ballots? This is where my claim of disenfranchisement comes to bear. If all 265 were only given one ballot and one ballot was scanned in, there were a number of disenfranchised voters in that they should have had that second ballot, that second piece of paper to that would have, I don't know how many questions, maybe it was two or three of the questions that printed out on the second paper, irrelevant. The point being, that is factually disenfranchised voters just from a training standpoint.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And that was on the first day of early voting.
Well, how was it rectified? I mean, did anybody contact the 265 voters and give them an opportunity to recast their votes? How did they lose it? What was the resolution?
Exactly. There has been no resolution. I personally went to the Secretary of State's office down in Austin 3 weeks ago. I took that information. I took the sworn affidavit from the poll judge that was there that witnessed this. The intent was to talk to Secretary of State John Scott to bring him up to speed that, look, Tarrant County has a significant number of disenfranchised voters. We need an investigative team to come audit this process to see how many were disenfranchised to determine, do we need a redo of this entire election? I'm not saying we need that, but I'm not saying we don't either. I'm saying we need an investigation to determine that. I went down to Austin. Mr. Scott wasn't there. I was able to talk to his executive director and his press secretary. Gave them the information. We talked for about 45 minutes. Gave them the rundown on all of the different systems failures, the hardware failures of the different parts of the system. They agreed that sounds like a substantial problem. They gave me the email address to the lead investigator. Now, there is an investigative team here in Tarrant County right now that is investigating a forensic investigation, is what they call it, of the 2020 general election. That is taking place in Collin, Denton, Tarrant, and Dallas counties and has been for, oh, goodness gracious, 6 months or so yet. The Secretary of State set aside $4 million and an investigative team to investigate the 2020 general election. My contention is, or what I was trying to get done with the Secretary of State's office, since we already have that investigative team here now and we already have monies set aside, we are asking for the Secretary of State to repurpose that investigative team to audit this election right now. This is fresh. This isn't 2 years ago. This is real time. This happened right now. We need to know this minimally to restore the voters' confidence in the system. Because I'll tell you right now, since 2020, there is no confidence in our election system. We have an opportunity right now if the Secretary of State would repurpose that team to get in here. Hey, perhaps it was only, let's say it was a low number. Let's say it was 25% of the 265. Let's say it was 45 voters. 45 voters were disenfranchised. Okay? No matter what the system is, a paper ballot system, a computer system, no matter what the system is, you're going to have disenfranchised voters. It's the nature of the beast. My contention is, because of the complexity of the system, I'm referring to only one polling location. During early voting, we had 46. Now, if you extrapolate 265 out of one polling location, and then you multiply it times the other 46, we know that there were other problems in the other 46 locations also. I am only addressing the one that I was personally witness to. This is a serious problem. It needs action. I haven't been able to get in front of the Secretary of State now. I do have the email address to the lead investigator. I haven't sent out an email yet, as I have still been trying to get a hold of Mr. Scott at the Secretary of State's office in hopes of having a face-to-face conversation with him and the team. See, there's a team, and I'm part of the team. I am only one part. Mr. Brewster, who's on the line with us, he is the premier technology, hardware technology side of the team. He knows more than anyone on our team. I have the overall view. I have some specifics to the failures. Mr. Brewster can go into detail with the hardware side of it and the failures that were involved there. again, to a summation of the failure of the system in this one location. This is just, I am referring to just the training aspect of it. We haven't even gotten into the systems failures yet. This is a large, large issue that needs to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Brewster, can you speak to your area of expertise on this?
And I don't want to oversell myself here, but I am a guy that's got a lot of technical experience working in a variety of systems, complex things. I've managed operations and complex processes, and I've been involved in looking into election integrity for several months, actually about a year now, a little over a year. I don't have a whole lot of confidence in the systems to begin with. The reconciliation procedures and everything that we're meeting is accordance with the law, but and with the standards of the election industry, but those standards are pretty low compared to what everybody else in industry and any other industry would do. We do have a pretty complex system. People walk in. Those problems that Mr. Marshall described continued through the election process in various ways. People were just confused about how to put two ballots in. It was something that they hadn't seen before. In fact, I spoke to a gentleman today, or we both did, that had been involved in elections for over 20 years, and he seemed rather incredulous that we even needed two pieces of paper, you know, two pieces of ballot stock to do it. But, you know, there's no doubt that that was the case. We definitely did. And people were confused by that, both on the election staff and although the election staff got up to speed after a day or so, the voters continued to be confused by it. One of the things that it kind of tells me right off the bat is that the testing is inadequate. And my background is aircraft maintenance, so we test everything. You know, airplanes didn't go in the air. Still, everything we've done has been examined just very, very closely. And it's pretty obvious that nobody voted a full ballot, and to where they knew that it was going to take two pieces, to where they could give somebody a heads up. You know, the people in the field just had no idea that that was coming. Shouldn't have been a crisis. It just should have been one of those things that we were prepared for. But, you know, the testing is pretty minimal.
Let me stop you there. How can it be said that they tested the machines if they did not know that two pieces of paper were going to be required?
Great question.
It's an excellent question. And in fact, testing has been going on for the next election in the last couple of days, and I really wanted to be down there to watch it. It's open to the public, and I'll give you this. The people at the election center down there are very open. They'll show you everything, but I'll explain some of my concerns. In the first place, when I walk in and I see the testing, you can't imagine the number of white boxes that are everywhere. There are thousands of these boxes. This is just a very extensive logistical situation. All these boxes have to be tested, inspected, maintained, stored, secured. And so for a test, they put the machines into a test mode. And in most cases, they're voting a single issue on each one of the ballot marking devices, which is the device that you, a Duo is the brand name or is the trade name. And in most cases, they'll vote about one issue on each one of those, and then they'll run them through the count and make sure that the count adds up to what's accepted. But, yeah, you're right that you didn't know there was going to be two pieces of paper, so it's not much of a test. And you were the one that made that observation, not me. So it doesn't take much technical expertise to know that wasn't a very thorough test, does it?
No. And so there has to be some protocols and procedures that were to take place. So are you saying that they failed to follow their own
protocols, you know?
No, they probably followed their protocols. In fact, I'm guessing that they followed them exactly, but that doesn't, just because you follow protocols doesn't mean that your protocols are accurate or active, significant enough to deal with what needs to be dealt with. Your testing program has to be designed well enough to find potential problems. If it's a poor testing program, you know, it's not going to do what you need it to do. So, yeah, in my business, we test everything. You know, when I got through doing a major inspection on an aircraft, we put it up and made that airplane do everything it could possibly do before it was released back to service again. In this case, we are testing, and they're testing to industry standards. I just don't think much of the industry standards.
So as far as the software, do we know where the software came from and whether it's been tested in other areas of the country?
Yes, the software itself, Hart Intercivic is a Texas company. It's based in Austin. And to be accepted, it has to be tested by an agency that's certified via the election administration in Washington. There's two companies that do that testing. Some people feel like that testing is not adequate, is not very thorough there either. I have not examined that in detail and won't offer an opinion on that. Then once it's accepted by them, Texas has a series of inspectors that look over the equipment before it's accepted for use in Texas, and that seems to me to be a pretty rudimentary inspection as well. I've read most of those reports, and then they recommend to the Secretary of State as to whether or not that equipment's going to be accepted or not. And, for instance, we have two companies' equipment that are eligible to be used in Texas. One of the other major manufacturers is not able to be used in the state.
Well, let me pose a question to both of you all then. Are we saying that this is a system error, or are we saying this is a human error?
I just don't think the protocols and procedures are very thorough to start with. And then the equipment's okay, but there's a lot of it. It's not understood. And one of the problems is the public. You and I don't really have an idea what's inside it. You know, the only people that have really examined the software are supposedly the people in Washington. Some people feel like that's not adequate. It's not a good enough inspection. There are people that will argue whether or not the current certifications are valid. And under Texas law, that gets complicated, and I'd refer you to a lawyer or somebody else on that. But you and I don't know much at all about what's going on inside our elections. Really, the only thing that we know is that they tell us that, and we can kind of see these records, that 100 people showed up and they got 100 ballots and everything's good. Well, I'm going to take this back and I'm going to use a check analogy, and some people don't like it, but let's say I had three customers come into my business today and each one of them wrote me a check. I sent three checks to the bank, and the bank says the next morning, okay, we got three checks and there's $300 in your account. Well, no, I sent you three $1,000 checks. No, it's $300. Well, let me see the scans that you took of it. Oh, we don't keep all those scans, and you can't look at them anyway because we made a rule that said you can't look at them. Okay, the teller ran a tape when they did the deposit and when they did their reconciliation that day. Let me see the tape. Well, we had two watchers that asked for the tapes during the process of this election, and they were told, well, we don't have time to run them right now. And, you know, they're not required to be run at a particular time. They're not required to be used in reconciliation, but I don't think that's the public's expectation. I think the public is expecting that to be there. Now, I've put public information requests in to try and get those documents, and I haven't gotten a response yet. We're going to see how they go, and there's some other documents I'd like to see as well. And I'm working with people in the county on that, and I hope and I think that there are some people in the county that are going to work in good faith with me. But so far, when we've requested documents across the state, we've had trouble getting the ones that are most meaningful. And we're working on those issues now, but it lets you what?
Let me ask you this question. So you're saying that the current system does not have a check and balance system in place?
It is not adequate in my view. Yeah, the check and balance is not adequate in my view. What they will tell you is that we did a post-election audit and we checked a statistically significant amount of votes, and we did a hand count on that, and it was fine. Now, I haven't been able to attend that yet, and that's my fault. I had some things that were going on, and I really would have liked to. But, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. When I was in business, I checked 3% of my inventory every day. I did a cycle count that checked my inventory 3 times a year, and then once a year, I was subject to having the entire thing inspected, my entire inventory checked again by at least my supervisor, and generally and quite often by outside inspectors. And we don't ever get anything but the little daily count when we do an inspection with the election system. And that meets the law. I'm going to tell you that meets the law, but I don't think it's very good.
So let me
step in. Mike is very cautious and maybe rightfully so. He's very cautious in answering the specifics to the questions. I want to answer this question. It's a huge problem. We cannot reconcile the checkbook. What does that look like? For me as a voter, I want to see the ballots themselves, the ballots that were fed in to the recording equipment. I want to compare that to this tape that is printed out that says, yes, we received 100 ballots, okay? And then the computer record that says, yes, we received. There's three ways we can look at the votes. The ballots themselves are the receipt that says I deposited $1,000 into my checking account. Now I want to compare that to the computer and I want to compare it to the tape. We are not allowed to touch the ballots. This is a problem. We cannot reconcile the vote. Mm-hmm. We are having to take their word for it. Oh, yeah, no, there was 100. We're good. Everything's good. Everything's good. We did this. We did that. Everything's good. Okay, that's fine. That's your word. I need to see it. I need to be able to reconcile my checkbook with the votes themselves. Until that's done, Gary. No, go ahead.
It appears that people want to talk to you about this. Listen, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Gary Hines, your host. And we're talking to two Republicans who feel the March 1st primary needs to either have a recount or a redo. They feel that just simply too many things went wrong for us to completely ignore. We're talking to them tonight to better understand what all went wrong because things have moved forward as though no one had a problem, but obviously there's a lot of people who have a problem with what went wrong with the March 1st primary. So we're gonna take a phone call from 903-802. Good evening, you're on Let's Talk Fort Worth. 903, I'm sorry, I didn't open their phone line. 903-802, good evening, you're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
How are you doing, ma'am?
Fine, how are you?
Good. In regards to the March 1st primary, even early voting, I mean, you know, we had a lot of issues with the machines, you know, chewing up, spitting up ballots, causing spoiled ballots, which, you know, we kind of know. We've seen what happened. I mean, there was I mean, countless amounts of machines that had to be, you know, moved out, moved in, you know, and the concerning part of it was some of these vehicles that we've seen showing up with these machines were vehicles that were from out of state. Oklahoma was one, Virginia, California. I mean, I'm like, what the hell is going on? You know, I mean, and these are just everyday cars. It's like, why are these not official cars? You know, so we know who and what's bringing them in. Because how do we know? Who do we trust? You know, what the hell? You know, and that's crazy. You know, to me, that just to witness that was like, I was like, wow. You know,
now,
so,
you
I mean, that bothered me. And then, you know, causing, do what?
Did you say car or cars?
Cars, vans, cars, trucks, I mean, you name it.
Okay.
Yeah, if
yeah,
I could address that, Carrie.
Uh-huh.
Carrie, may I address that question or statement?
Sure.
Okay, what he's talking about, I did witness at the Southwest Sub-Courthouse location. They had a failure on the Democrat side of the DUAs, the ballot marking devices. They had a failure. The Democrats were being turned away from that polling location because of the failure of the DUOs. People were literally coming out of that building screaming. Now, mind you, I'm on the ballot. I'm 100 feet away. I waited till the people came out there. Hey, what's going on there? They're telling us we can't vote. This is voter disenfranchisement. I'm like, calm down, calm down. I make a few calls. I called to my poll watcher. I had a poll watcher inside there. I said, hey, what's going on in there? Well, the Democrat duo just went down. We don't know what to do. I got in front of the Democrat voters. I got on my phone. I found a different polling location for them. I said, hey, y'all go over here. You can vote there as well. That calmed them down. They kept going. I called back in to my poll watcher. I said, hey, look, you need to tell the poll judge they need to put up a list of the closest polling locations, and they need to give these Democrat voters the next closest polling location. They did that. I stayed there roughly an hour later. Two vans show up. I see two gentlemen get out of those vans carrying the white boxes. The gentleman on the other line is describing those are the duos. I went up to them and I asked them, hey, what are y'all doing? Well, the Democrats, the machines went down, the duos went down, we're replacing them. The vans that they were in, it was suspicious. I'm looking at the vans, I look in the back of the vans, in the back of each one of these vans, there was probably six duos, and they were just tossed in there like Tonka toys. They were laying on their sides, on their backs, on their tops, and I'm going, oh my goodness, who is this? Well, I asked the man, he had a badge on. I said, who are you exactly? He said, we are with the subcontracted company that's here to fix the machines, to fix the system. See, we don't do this ourselves. We subcontracted out. Now, there were two gentlemen. One of them didn't have a badge on, and I asked him, I said, well, who are you? Because they're about to walk into the polling location. I said, well, who are you? He says, well, you know, I'm just a contractor. I'm here helping him. I said, well, where's your badge? I said, are you telling me that I can just walk in and say I'm a contractor and I can touch these duos? I can touch the election system? I can just say this? Well, we all know each other. I said, sir, that's not good enough for me. I don't know you from Adam. You don't have a badge on, and you're holding our election system in your hand. I don't understand this. This does not look okay to me. I go back out to their van. I start looking in the vans. You know, just looking through the windows, I can see these duos just all tossed in the back of these vans. Took pictures of the license plates, and sure enough, one of them was from, they were both from California. I waited for the gentleman to come back out. About an hour later, they come back out. I start quizzing them some more, and they kind of got a little belligerent and rude. They're like, sir, we don't have to tell you who we are. You know, you're really in our way. And I'm like, okay, yeah, you do have to tell me who you are. You just carried my voting devices, our voting devices, in there. Suffice to say, at the end of the story, they left. But that's addressing what the gentleman on the line right now is talking about. We have an outside company that's carrying around our voting machines all over the Metroplex if we have a problem. And who are they? Who vetted them? How come they – I mean, what's to stop that individual from pulling over the side of the road and grabbing one of those duos and going, oh, let's just add 50 votes in here for whoever? This is a problem.
Wow.
So wow is right.
So caller, you witnessed that as well?
Yes, we've seen that at the Summerfield's library. We had the, here's another issue that was over there as well. And so that's when I was picked up on it. I said, hold on, what the hell is going on here? You know, and of course, Aaron Soles was there, who ran for lieutenant governor. And, you know, and Melanie Fletcher, a couple people that I know, they walked up and said, hey, what's this? What's up with that? You know, and why are you parked here? You can't park here anyway. You know, and I mean, the guy was just rude as hell. I mean, we got video of it. It was insane, you know, to see this. I'm like, what is going on around here? I mean, there's so much more, you know, that's out there. I mean, it's just absolutely, you know, wild. This is one of the wildest ones I've seen in my little short, you know, years on this earth. And it's very frustrating, you know. And what's even, you know, there's so much more frustrating. What's frustrating is I know Mike Brewster had talked about, you know, the public, you know, educating the public, you know. And sometimes when you do educate the public, they just don't want to hear it, you know, because they look good, they smell good, they're what we're used to, and that's got to stop, you know. In regards to our elections, we can't, you know, recycle politicians. We can't put them in there. Incumbents, we got to stop that, you know. And that's part of our elections. We have to stop doing that. And then we have to look at, like, who our election administrator is, which is Hyder Garcia, and we all know the story, you know, about how he got there. You know, and how here we are. You know, he's an anchor baby, went back to Venezuela, had gotten some trouble over there. He's over here, and now we're stuck with him. You know, and we have to get rid of him. I mean, there's no other way. And, you know, the ways that we do this is we all have to group up together no matter what. But we can't give the pages to the playbook that we're writing or writing the playbook to those establishment, because all they do is figure out a way to, you know, to counter it, or they scrub it. You know, because what I witnessed during the public testing was, there is remote access capabilities. How do we know that, you know, that Hyder or one of the other two people that helped build this program is not, you know, paid to tweak it or saying, hey, look, you need to change these numbers or X, Y, and Z, you know, pay to play. You know, with the pay to play, it's the issue buying out people's votes. You know, hey, you're going to go vote for this person, so if you ever run for precinct chair, we'll back you. Otherwise, no, because that happened too. I mean, there's dirty stuff going on. And the issue with
who are you saying wrote the program to the voting machine?
The Hart Smartmatic, and I believe Hyder was one of the three people. I haven't been able to pinpoint that he had anything like that to do with it, but I know he was deep in with it. He's by trade, he's a he's a program administrator, or I'm not sure what they call it in the workforce, but you know, he's able to write codes and stuff like that. But the fact that there is even remote access, yeah, software engineer, thank you. But the fact that there are even remote capabilities in there inside the software is bullshit to me. They need to scrub that, because, I mean, I can get it. I can go to, let's just use Light of the World Church, where I normally vote at. I can sit outside, and I can get on the Internet, and I can do dim screen. You'll never know I'm watching you vote. Dim is very easy. It doesn't take much to get through and watch somebody vote. Remote access capabilities, that needs to go away. I called Hyder on that when I was watching the public testing. I said, hey, what is this? Why are they changing the date manually? Why is this happening right here in front of me? You should not be able to change this date. It should automatically do it without anybody touching it. But nope, here we are, and I'm watching this happen at the public testing. Then I see remote access capabilities, and before the guy could start working, I said, hey, don't move it off that screen. I said, what is that, Hyder? I said, I understand a little bit about computers. That should not be on there. Oh, that's just something. I said, no, there's no excuses, Hyder. And, I was getting loud at that point in time. And David Lambertson, an election judge, was there. I said, that should never be on there. Why? And he could not give me an explanation.
I was not aware of that, Carrie. What I am aware of, I didn't really want to get into the software too much because I'm not as educated as most people were the software concerned. Here's what concerns me about the software. As running for the GOP GOP chair candidate, when I began that process, I dug into election law. I dug into the laws and legislation around the voting system, because I ran my campaign. My platform was election integrity. the election system is what prompted me to run for the leader of the Republican Party in Tarrant County. So I buried myself, immersed myself in the election law, in the all of the legislation around the voting system that we have, the Hart Inner Civic System. What concerned me immensely and still does is the fact that 8 out of 10 laws, pieces of legislation around the Hart Inner Civic System pertain to the hardware. Only 2 out of 10 pertain to the software. Why is this significant? It is significant because the software is so complex that our legislators can't even write laws around it because they don't understand it. I go back to the analogy I started with in the beginning. I have to turn my iPhone 12 over to my 9-year-old granddaughter to show me how to operate it. That's software. When you talk about this election system, it's so complex. We've given it to our legislators in Austin and said, hey, you need to write some laws around this. Now, here's a problem with that. Because the software is, and correct me when, if I use the wrong verbiage here, Mike, the software is private. It's we are not allowed, the legislators are not allowed to look at a manual around the software. So if you don't know how something operates, how are you supposed to write a law around it to protect us?
I do want to jump in here because this is an area that bugs me. And, you know, both of these guys, I'm a little bit more guarded than either one of these. But one of the issues that just came up that really irritates me is I'm a technician with a lot of experience. I would like to think that I'd be an expert on this equipment by now. But one of the things is that I can't get current manuals on this equipment where I can read it and understand all of it that's going on. Now, they're pretty good at the election center at answering my questions, but being able to see what's there in the manuals and understand it for myself, I mean, I've got 40 years experience doing that. I would really like to do that. But there's another thing that's brought up, and this is becoming more and more common, is that the software is proprietary. And so when we wrote a check to Hart for $11 million, we married Hart.
Mm-hmm.
Every year, we have to buy another license to be able to use that. If we don't buy the license, we've got a whole bunch of equipment sitting in there that is absolutely no good to us. We married that company. Every year they have to do that, and it has to be a sole source agreement because nobody else can offer the software and the support for the equipment because everything is proprietary. And that, I've got a personal problem getting married to a product that I own. You know, when I buy something, I expect it to be bought and it's mine. And that's not the case here.
$600,000 annually. The number is $600,000 annually, what Mike's talking about. $600,000 annually.
I know I saw that invoice the other day. I don't remember what it was. But, you know, now you're married to Hart. You just can't do anything else. And I have a problem with that. I just don't think that's a good way to do business, that you get yourself involved to where you can't make changes or you can't demand things. And so the whole thing where the public is can't see what's going on in the system, can't see the manuals, and I guarantee that the bad guys out there got enough money that if they want the manuals, they can find a way to buy them. But for you and I to go out and find them, I've been looking for a year, and I've got some bits and pieces here and there, but the whole thing, but that whole situation just irritates me. That we're married to them. We're stuck with them, and
they're not even doing it. Cheating on us. Our spouse is cheating on us.
thank you, Trevor, for that call. We're going to go to another call. That's 314-381. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk at Work.
This stuff, these actions that we witnessed in the last couple of years are going to continue and continue and continue. Why? Because it's worked before. That's why, Terry, I gave you a copy of that one bill that calls for a ballot change can be made by Congress according to the Constitution, where you should have separate federal ballot with federal candidates, president, vice president, U.S. senator, and congressperson, separate from the state and local. Well, state and local ain't going to never get stuff right. They're not going to do it. They are not going to do it. Then look at these, look at California, look at New York. Illegals can vote on state and local issues according to the Constitution. That's the way it is. And you got about to have a Supreme Court justice, a black female, who when Biden made that statement, I'm going to appoint a black female. That was illegal. I can't do that at work. You can't do it when it
right.
comes to admitting in school. And another thing, this dummy don't even know what the Dred Scott case is about. Don't know how to define a woman.
Amen.
So
Amen.
You're never going to stop this. There shouldn't be no foreign equipment involved in your election. No, sir. Go back to the old punch. I would rather deal with the Chads than what you're going through now. And you mean to tell me some people pulled up in a truck and went in and got your equipment and they wouldn't identify themselves? How the hell you know where they came from? They could have came from another planet.
Thank you. Absolutely true. Right. When you talk about, and thank you, sir, for bringing that up. When you talk about foreign entities inside our election system, the previous caller brought up a name, Hodder Garcia. That's our elections administrator in Tarrant County. Why that is significant to me, when you go to his LinkedIn page, you can go to his LinkedIn page. He will give you his history. It is my understanding, and please don't quote me on this, I'm going to say it on air, but it's my understanding, and he said this, that he was born in Pennsylvania. When you look at his LinkedIn page, he gives you his biography. Yes, he was born in Pennsylvania, supposedly, but he moved, his parents moved him as a young child back to Venezuela, where he was educated from, I believe it was, first through fifth, through middle school, through high school, and then educated in college in Venezuela for 7 years as a software engineer. 7 years in software engineer school. This man is the smartest man probably in the United States when it comes to software engineering. After that seven-year software engineer education, he went to work for Smartmatic. Why is this significant? It's significant because he was the lead software engineer for a computer technology company that wrote software for Smartmatic voting machines. Now, we're using Hart InterCivic. The point being, when you compare Dominion, Hart, and the others, the software, the code writing is what's relevant. This man is an absolute expert in code writing, in the software. It doesn't matter that it was Smartmatic. It wouldn't matter if it was Dominion. The code writing is the same. It's the same. The ones and zeros, how you write the code, it doesn't matter across the board. It's written the same way, and he's the premier expert. Now, he was educated, trained, grew up and lived as an adult in Venezuela with his Pennsylvania birth certificate. Mr. Garcia did not show up in this country until 2016. In 2016, he shows up in California, lands a job as the elections administrator in a county in California. In 2018, he shows up here in Tarrant County, the same time the Hart InterCivic computer system that he is a software expert at in writing the code came to Tarrant County. Now, we have a man that has only been in the United States since 2016 that is now in charge of the third largest county in Texas voting system. Is he an American citizen? Okay, they say he is. He was born in Pennsylvania. He got a birth certificate. Is he an American? He wasn't raised here. He wasn't, you know, he didn't grow up with, you know, the Pledge of Allegiance, et cetera. All the things that make us American are the values. He came from Venezuela, people. He is controlling our elections. Tarrant County, if we lose Tarrant County, we lose Texas. If we lose Texas, we lose the nation. Tarrant County is the epicenter of election battle. This is the election battleground. This is ground zero. and Hyder Garcia from another country holds our elections in the palm of his hand. What happened to Venezuela when he went around selling and distributing and installing all of his computer systems in Venezuela? If people will go back and Google it. Look what happened to Venezuela. When that regime changed as a result of the computers in that country, their country started to crash. Oil became short, food shortages. I mean, most people probably don't remember. Go back and look it up. It was those computers that he moved and distributed around that country that changed the election, and then the economy crashed because of who came into power. I bring you to currently what's happening in our country right now. Oil shortages, food shortages. Biden says, hey, food shortages are going to get worse. This is a repeat of Venezuela, people. Who's at the helm? Hyder Garcia.
Oh, we got to go back to the phone lines now. Listen, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Tonight we're talking to two Republicans who feel the March 1st primaries need either a recount or a redo. They feel that it's just simply too many things that went wrong to ignore. So listen, we're going to go back to the phone lines. If you have a question or comment, call me tonight at 515-605-9321 and then press 1. That's 515-605-9321 and then press 1. We're going to area code 817-602. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
817-602-0644.
Yeah, that wasn't going to give out your whole number, but that would be you, yes.
Thank you so much, Carrie. How are you this evening?
I'm fine. How are you?
Hey, it's Marvin Sutton, and I've been on the show before. I've been an election judge for 20 years, Carrie, and
okay.
I understand what the conversation is about. I guess in any system that you have that involves electronics, there's always a chance for glitches in those systems. You won't find a system that's 100% operational without defects. I've been 30 years of air traffic control, and I can tell you some of our systems do have defects, and we have backup redundancy systems that comes online. So with that being said, most systems will have an acceptable margin of error that's acceptable. You try to get as close to 100%. But it kind of strikes me as odd. You know, I won an election back in 2019. Didn't have a problem with the system at all. I lost the election during that period of time, over a 15-year period of time. Didn't have a problem. I know that there are some mistakes made because people are human. And so you factor that in. I don't think systematically there's a problem with our election system. I would say there may be problems with certain individuals or people making errors, which is part of that margin of error. I think with our democracy intact, that the system we do have work as it was designed to. And let's look at it from a personnel standpoint. The people that run our elections are people that live in our community. It's my neighbor. It's my colleagues, coworker, people that volunteer their time. And to think that there's so many issues with voting as a candidate, Carrie, you pay almost $30 per individual to try to generate people to come out and vote. Mm-hmm. And people do this really voluntarily. You don't make a lot of money as an election judge. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are some problems that we do have, and you always try to improve the system. But systematically, I don't see a issue with the voting systems. You may have glitches. You may have personnel understanding of what the election judge manual says. But
mm-hmm.
overall, I think we have a good system. Can we do better? Absolutely, no doubt about it. But right now, I say the system we do have, I like it. Can we improve it? Absolutely. Can we improve the way we staff and training? Absolutely. But we have one of the best systems in Tarrant County. And so in 2016, we elected the president. President Trump was elected on the system. You heard no problems about the election equipment at all. 4 years later, there's a huge problem with the equipment, with the integrity of the election. And I think it's hypocritical if we go down that road until one of our candidates win or lose. We've got to make sure we stay focused on what's real. We've got to protect the integrity of the system. We've got to protect the voters' rights, and that's a big issue, ensuring that everybody have an opportunity to vote, but striving to ensure that we have systems that come online and function as they were designed to function.
I would like to address that, and just for the record, the gentleman and I have met. We had lunch this afternoon. He's very knowledgeable. He knows the law around election voting far better than I do, but I would take issue with a couple of his statements. The first is that with this system, it is a very expensive way to get there, and that's in the first place. The second place is if determining whether it's a sound system or not, my estimation is, like I mentioned earlier, I don't think the reconciliation methods and the openness of the system are adequate for us to make a decision. I think there is too much hidden here to decide whether it's good or bad. Now, I'm going to be real honest with you. It was 2020 that brought me into this because I saw things that didn't seem right. But right now, what I'm looking at and that I'm wanting to examine has nothing to do with a partisan issue. It has to do with a Republican primary. So I'm wanting to make sure that the Republican primary, my party, was run well. So that, you know, that's not a partisan thing. And really, and I'm going to be very honest, I supported Jeff Marshall for the race, but the reason I'm questioning this isn't because Jeff lost. It's because there are things that I don't think are adequately transparent, and I think they need to be. And I'm also going to make one more clarification. Is we've talked about a recount or a redo. A recount is really another thing. It's a different thing than an audit, or to be able to audit or thoroughly reconcile the system. I'm not pushing for a recount, but I do want more documents. I want more transparency. I want a real reconciliation that is like what I had to do in business. Those are some differences of opinion that we have.
Yeah, and I want to step in there and make a couple of points as well. The 2016 election, the system that we're using in Tarrant County right now is not the same as we used in 2016. There are different systems. That being said, I want to make clear, I am not screaming, saying, or implying election fraud in no way, shape, form, or fashion. I also want to be clear, I'm crystal clear I lost my election. I'm crystal clear about that. What I am trying to scream from the rooftop is a system and hardware failure that wasn't a quote-unquote glitch. It was system-wide. I have 14 people that I know, 14 affidavits of failures of different parts of the system, from the duos to the server to the BMDs, to the scanners. I have affidavits of all of that. I am screaming, we have hundreds, if not thousands, of disenfranchised voters on both sides of the aisle. I witnessed Democrat voters coming out of the Southwest sub-courthouse location screaming, disenfranchisement, disenfranchisement. I am saying we have a problem with the system. The system is not performing as intended. Additionally, when you go on to Hart's website, they talk about transparency. There is no transparency in this system. We cannot balance the books. We cannot balance the checkbook. That is not transparency. It is the opposite of transparency.
Okay, Marvin, do you have a rebuttal on that, or?
Yeah, so let's go back to primary elections. Primary elections are conducted every even-numbered year. We've been doing primaries for quite some time. In 2016, we had a primary election. Nobody complained. General election in November, we elected a president. Nobody complained about the system. It was not a problem until 2020 that we had this problem with the voter integrity issue. And so we're using an electronic device to We still use them basically the same system. It's a HART system. The one we used before was a paper ballot. One was called an e-scan and an e-slate. The e-scan actually scanned the paper ballot and counted the paper ballot. The e-slate brought up an electronic ballot so voters could vote on. There was no paper trail. With the new Duo system, you have both worlds. You have your paper ballot and you have the electronic as well. You vote on the machine. It prints out how you voted. You dump it into a feeder that feeds it into a box that secure and counts your ballot. The concept is the same. With nothing changing, all of a sudden we go from 2016, where everything was great and nobody complained at all, till 2020, we've got a huge problem with the election system. And so if we're going to drill down deep, we're drilling down at the election system, but we're not drilling as deep to the voter rights issue. We're not drilling down deep where it comes to redistricting and disenfranchisement. We're drilling down, and we're going down a road when we should stay focused on, because the Constitution, U.S. Constitution, four times listed that your vote shall not be infringed or denied. Four times in our U.S. Constitution, that phrase occurs more than any other phrase in the U.S. Constitution besides the Due Process Clause. If we're going to focus on voting issues, it should be ensuring that voters have the right to vote. It should be ensuring that we have afforded every opportunity for a voter to vote. We should make it easier, not harder, to vote. And you and I have had this conversation, Curry, about the mail-in ballots, the discrepancies with the new bill that Governor Abbott signed that basically put a huge hurdle for seniors and requiring them to produce either your driver's license or Social Security number and having to know what number you use to register in the state of Texas. The machines we have allows you the opportunity to vote. Can we improve the system? There's always improvement. There's always improvement in the system. You won't find a perfect system. That's not going to happen. And you're going to find individuals that have flaws, and we're human. So individuals will make mistakes as election judge. But the process is you've got people who are volunteering their time. You've got people in both parties. You've got people that are neighbors, people that work other jobs, that are willing to give up their time to ensure that you have a place to vote and to process your vote. They do the best job they can. Nobody intentionally goes out to deceive the system. Nobody really intentionally do that. It is so hard to get people to vote, Carrie. You spend lots of time on the phone calling voters to come out and vote, and Jeff Marshall will tell you that. You spend a bunch of time trying to get mailers and text messages to try to get people to vote. If it was so easy to get people to vote, you would just stay home and people just rush to the polling place to vote. That's not the case. You've got to get people engaged in the process. So you have to look at the entire system, the voting process, the actual voters, how do we improve our outreach, our turnout, and how do we improve our accuracy. You won't find 100% system without any flaws or errors. That's just a fact of life, and we know that. And we try to improve on that data day in and day out. But the problem I have with the way this whole thing turns out is 2016, 4 years ago, we didn't even talk about voting disparities. No voting discrepancies occurred. We didn't have a problem with it at all. 4 years later, there's a huge problem.
Now, I'm gonna jump in here. And you are absolutely right that we weren't. And I had seen reports of problems prior to that, and you know, like everybody else, I think the idea was somebody ought to do something about that. And when 2020 happened, it focused a lot of attention. There's a lot of irregularities around the country on 2020. Whether anything improper happened here or not, that isn't you know, I don't have anything that says there was, but around the country there were a lot, and it brought attention to the issue. And as I start looking at it, I came to think there was some there. That's what got me into the issue, and there's a real long story there. Now, as we go forward, we can talk about voter qualifications and mail-in voting and registration, and there's a whole lot to talk about there, and I'll tell you, the other gentleman probably knows a little bit more about that than I do, but I'm seeing some problems there, but I'm not going there tonight. What I am talking about now is that this system is opaque. We can't see into it. I am telling you that what we are looking at, we can't make decisions about how effective the electronic voting system is because we are blocked from seeing it. You are not allowed to see the ballots. You are not allowed to see the ballot images. The ballot images are not even all stored in Texas. You're not allowed to examine the software. You are not allowed to examine the equipment that the software runs on. You are being blocked from access from many of, or there is resistance. I am working on that resistance right now, and I think there may be some people in the county that are willing to be very fair with me on that, and I hope that's the case. But there are documents and reports that should be coming out of that system that I think we should be looking at that so far we haven't had access to. So, you know, those are altogether different things than mail-in voting and all of this. I'm talking about the expense and the logistical problems of putting this system in the field, and I'm talking about the opaqueness of it. And I'm going to stick to my guns on those.
All right. Thank you, Marvin, for that call. We're going to go to 817-716. Good evening. You're on West Talk Fort Worth. 817-716. Good evening. You're on West Talk Fort Worth. 817-716. Good evening. You're on West Talk Fort Worth. Okay, that person obviously doesn't know I'm going through it. I don't call out your whole number. I just call out the prefix and the first three digits of your number. That's 817-716. Good evening. You're on West Talk Fort Worth. I apologize. That person has been holding a really long time, and obviously they have forgot they've been holding. Again, for the last call, 817-716. Good evening. You're on West Talk Fort Worth. They obviously don't know that I've come to them. Okay, Adrian, you had a question. Adrian? Okay, is my phone?
Hey, Carrie, I'm here. I'm here, Carrie. I have my phone muted. Yeah, so quick question regarding the and I had one question, I think, but Mr. Sutton got off, but it's a general question anyone can answer. First question is regarding the poll watchers, the poll workers, the judges, those people who are, elected to select or selected, whatever, to do the job for a particular precinct. What's the time specifics are they given to be at the location? What's the time specifics for everything to be set up? And what's the time specifics for that polling place to be open so people can be, ball rolling?
That's a pretty good question. And, you know, this is kind of a different issue. I want to get into a couple of things there. You owe a debt of gratitude to the people who are going to be election judges and election clerks because they work very, very hard.
Yes, they do.
It is a tough job. It is a long day. And if you're doing it like for early voting, which is done a little bit differently, you know, it's several long days put together. To get in there on election day, and I participated in that for the first time this year. And, you know, I'm trying to experience this from as many places as possible. But we were there at 5:30, and it was a little bit more complicated because we didn't have Democrats show up, and we had questions about what we were going to be allowed to do and what we could do and what we were going to do to get the polls open. But we were struggling to get the equipment set up and done in before 7 o'clock. And, again, there were some circumstances here that were a little bit unusual. And it could be done, but quite frankly, the team that was set was supposed to be sufficient, and I was asked to participate because they knew that I knew how to put stuff together and I'd seen it and was familiar with it. So they actually had an extra person there to help get things up and running. So it is an arduous task. Watchers, now and this is a place that Mr. Sutton knows a lot of stuff. I've got a lot of respect for him. I think it's Mr. Sutton. I've got a lot of respect for him. He knows some stuff. He can probably answer some of the questions on watching better than I do can, but I was a little bit disappointed for the primary as to how many watchers were out there and how many were available. I'm told that in some general elections and particularly presidential elections, they're kind of crawling over each other. I haven't experienced that. But like anything else, you know, I did aircraft maintenance and we had quality assurance and I was in management aircraft maintenance. So, you know, I was looking over my people's shoulders quite a bit, had quality assurance coming down, looking over both of our shoulders. And, you know, things just seem to work a little bit smoother when, you know, people are being watched. So I think watchers are an important part of the program too. That is a complicated program. But the poll workers and judges, you owe them. They're doing you a favor. And it is a difficult and it is a time-consuming, tiring job.
Well, let me ask a question here. What do you all say, you know, to those that say this sounds like a conspiracy theory? What are your thoughts?
I mean, I'll be the first to answer that.
I have no evidence to offer right now. Locally, nationwide, we're beginning to see things come out. There are nationwide, I think there are issues. I'll just leave it at that for now. I think there are issues.
What I'll add to that is, I'm not, again, not talking about fraud, okay? Not saying fraud at all, saying systems failure. This is not a conspiracy. I have 13 affidavits from poll watchers, judges, and clerks, okay, from different polling locations that witnessed different failures throughout the system. This is evidentiary. This is fact. This is not conspiracy. We have disenfranchised voters in Tarrant County. The only question is how many. That's the only question. How many were disenfranchised? I was reading one report from a poll judge earlier before I came on the air, and she pointed out the fact that one of the poll watchers came to her and said, hey, we have a problem on one of the duos. She goes over the duo. Well, the duo is asking for the second ballot to be inserted. What does that mean? That means that the person that was using that duo only had one sheet of paper. She put it in, cast his vote, spit it out. He walked away and put it into the recording device. He didn't get his second ballot. Again, evidence of a disenfranchised voter. It's not did we have disenfranchised voters, it's how many. My contention is, based on the evidence that I have, that minimally there were hundreds, possibly thousands. This is a huge problem. This is not a conspiracy. This is a failure of a system, the Hart Inner Civic system.
Okay. Trevor, book is Carrie, go ahead.
Karen, you think about the system failure, you think about it's amazing because, like, I go back to the time of the things. I always try to speak to time. Now, we got all this money invested. We know when our elections are going to be held. We have enough time to prep ourselves. Once you find out who the candidates are, you have enough time to get the ballots ready. You have enough time to say, okay, we're going to need this at this precinct. Make sure your voters know when they get to this precinct. This specific precinct is going to require door ballots, multiple ballots, blah, blah, blah. Time. We have enough time. What has been going on with the time prior to all of this happened? Because when you get to game day, teams practice away from the actual game day field. They practice at whatever facility they practice. They don't have time when they get to the day of the game to say, oh, you know what, we need to go over game starts at 12, 11 o'clock. We need to line it up and just go over a couple of these plays to see if we can get it. No. We got it's muscle, what they call it, muscle memory. We got to remember. When I'm, exactly. If I'm a quarterback, when I get out to call this play, this huddle, XYZ, 9-1-2-2, we – everybody line up. They already know what XYZ 9-1-2-2-3 is. You know what I'm saying? It ain't no, let's line it up. Let's practice it. Boom. Okay, we got it. We got it. Y'all got it? Let's do it one more time. Boom. You got it. You got it. Yeah, we got it. We got it. Then we get down there and they say, what happened? You know? So my thing is with timing, we know when we have in our elections. Perfection, we'll never reach perfection in this life. That's perfection has been done away with for centuries, since the fall of man. So we ain't talking about perfection. But we're talking about timing, a process that we've been doing year after year after year after year after year after year. Practice doesn't make perfect. Practice makes progress. It makes progress. Practice doesn't make perfect. It doesn't make perfect, but it makes progress. And my last question to be is, the software that we're speaking of, and a name was put out quite a bit of Mr. I think his name is Garcia. If he's the Tarrant County election chair, but he also has a say in the software, isn't that like a sort of like a conflict? Is that like a conflict of some sort, or do they just say, okay, you the election person, but you also know the system, so we depend on you. If something go wrong, X, Y, Z.
I think his proper title is election administrator. He's not a party chair. He's an election administrator.
Okay, yeah, I was just looking for the right title for his man. Cause I know some people, they whine about their little titles, you know. So, the election. Thank you, Terry. So, if he's that person, is it a conflict of interest if also he has something to do with the software that, if this be the case, if they say the software that was being used, he has something to do with the software. Is there a conflict of interest with that, or is it just, you know?
And I'm going to address that from a little bit of a different perspective. And one of the things that I am going to throw out, that this is a very complicated process. And fairness to the people in the election center, you may not realize it. You would think in the county it would be pretty simple, but I'm told that there is as many as 1,000 different ballots because of the different, you got different cities and water boards and whatnot. So there are a huge number of different ballots that have to be coordinated. And that's one of the reasons that they like the electronic stuff, is because they can stuff them all in one machine. But that's a very expensive and it's a complex way to get there. Another part of that is having your team trained and ready to go is the fact that we're relying, and they're paid, so technically they're not volunteers in that regard, but really for the amount of pay you're doing and the amount of stuff you're giving up, we're relying on volunteers, we're relying on citizens to show up and run the elections, and the more complicated it is, the harder it is to get people like that up to speed. Jeff will tell you that I try not to get into a situation where I work with volunteers very much, because it is hard. So those are two issues. But another one that is a little bit different approach to what you just said is when you accept the paradigm that we're going to use computers, and then you hire somebody from that came from the industry that makes that election equipment. And, you know, and it's not just something that happens with our election people here. This is throughout government. Typically, when you leave a position, you go into industry that has something to do with your government position. So we hired a guy that came out of the election industry. And when he retires, I think it's a pretty fair bet that he might go back to the election industry. And so what kind of response do you think you're going to get in the middle? It's probably going to be heavy on election industry boxes and technology, isn't it? So I kind of think that's a foregone conclusion. And, you know, let's use the example, if we use pre-printed hand-marked ballots and send them out to the election centers, the precincts, the hard-in certificate isn't going to make a whole lot of money on that, are they? Of course, printer is going to make a little bit more, but you know, all of those things come into play and have to be considered. And I sometimes think that we've just been cast with the idea that we're going to use a lot of boxes to conduct elections, and it doesn't necessarily have to be that way.
Okay.
Is that what you're saying?
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I'm very much satisfied, Carrie. Thank you. I'm very much satisfied. Thank you.
We're going to go back to Trevor Booker, who has additional questions. Trevor, your phone line is open.
Yes, and so, I mean, to kind of to break it down, I mean, you know, and I agree with Jeff, you know, I mean, we're not screaming fraud. We're just saying, you know, there's a faulty system. Well, I mean, the simplest way is to get rid of the system that's faulty. I mean, it costs less. I mean, we're spending $31 million on these machines just to screw up, and we're not getting the benefits from it. Our elections aren't benefiting from it. We're having people getting frustrated, and we got people that just flat out at this point in time are like, I don't even want to vote anymore. It's such a hassle. It's ridiculous. You know, there's people that are just like, they're done. They don't even want to be election judges anymore. They don't. I mean, I'm catching this from a lot of people in my messages and phone calls throughout the day. I mean, emails. I mean, on my campaign site, it is insane, you know, the multitudes. And so, you know, let's break it down. $31 to $33 million. Man, look, imagine what we could do with hand paper ballots. You know, going back to it, we never had any issues with it. You know, make sure they're numbered. You know, per the election code. I mean, election code 43.01 and 127.131. I mean, we can go down the list. Get back to voting in your precinct, hand counting ballots in your precinct. Period. That is a lot more secure way to try to start getting our elections to where people trust them again. But we have to do that way. But we also, there's not going to be any rest with our elections until Hyder is gone in Tarrant County. There is no other way. I mean, if you really, you know, care about America or care about your elections and all that, I mean, if Hyder was on the line, if he really cared, we're asking for it. We are asking for it. Step out, do the integrity thing, if you have any in you, if he was to be listening. But we're asking this from our county judge. But he's one of the five votes, so he's not going to, you know, it would make him look foolish to say, well, let's get rid of Hyder. But he should do it, and do it because he should care just as much as we do.
Wow. Okay. Well, you know, there's a lot going on with this election, and there's a lot of concerns. So if we had Ms. Hyder on the phone, are there any specific questions that anyone would ask him tonight is what I've been asked to pose to you all tonight. Do you have any specific questions if Ms. Hyder happened to be listening? Jeff Marshall.
Oh, I ask him questions all the time. He and I have spoken on a number of occasions. I wish we had had time to speak today. I had other things I had to do. I would like to have been down there for the testing today, because every opportunity I get to try and learn more about how the system works, I do it. Right now, my request for the department, and the county has some say in it, as well as I just want more transparency on the documents where we can really see what happens in the system. And I've got some procedural things they're put up too. The county has offered to do a workshop on the 26th of April. It'll be at 10 o'clock in the morning, you know, where they're going to entertain ideas. And I've worked for a good deal of time to get that to happen. I'm not a stranger to the commissioner's court. I'm in there pretty often. I'm not a great speaker, but I've been in there talking about issues for quite some time. I do have proposals. Most of them are geared towards streamlining procedures and making the system more open, transparent, and auditable. And transparency and auditability are the same thing.
Okay, let's
Mr.
Bridge, what's Let's do this. We have about 36 minutes left in the show. Mr. Hyder is listening. He has unmuted his phone and is willing to take questions. So we're going to go to Mr. Garcia now. Good evening, Mr. Garcia.
Hello,
how are
Mr.
you?
Garcia. How are you?
Hi, how are you doing? Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening.
Okay.
Can you hear me
well?
That's good. I'm sorry I didn't respond before. We were having dinner with the family and, you know, wanted to make sure we had a nice dinner. But I was listening and just wanted to chime in as soon as we were done. So lot said. So, you know, it's been quite an interesting segment. So I guess I'll ask you guys, what exactly do you want to focus on? Let's focus on specifics that we can work on and talk about.
Okay, I'll start off with the first question. I understand that April 4th is a very important day. They're saying that as of April 4th, that the system will be wiped clean. Is that true? And is there any way to put a pause on that if that is the case until this is all cleared up?
I
disagree.
I don't know what we're talking about or what it is, but no, nothing gets wiped and nothing gets...
I know where that came from, Hyder, and you and I can address the concern.
No, let's talk about it now.
The person that brought it up,
supposed to happen in May before.
This has to do with the V drives being recycled is what it has to do with. And
let's get to it right now. The Elections Code says that those USB drives that are in the machines that have a copy of the data that's inside the machine and that is the results, you know, the same precinct results that are posted on the website already that have been Canvas certified, they can be reused. After the 60-day mark, the Elections Code says you can you have to retain all ballot boxes untouched, all seals uncut, all media untouched for 60 days in case there is a contest. And then on the 60th day, you proceed to your normal activity. So those drives are reused in upcoming elections. The ballots are moved to permanent storage. And, you know, there's a series of logistical processes that occur. But there is no wiping of the system. In fact, I will tell you that, you know, to this day, we still have all the data from the November 21 election, from all the elections in 2021. We still produce open record responses based on data that's in the system. So there's no such thing as a wipe of the systems.
Okay.
I will agree with most of that. I'm going to disagree a little bit on the V drives. It's actually not the election code that mentions that. The election code on the V drives didn't say much. So Secretary of State guidance in 2019-23 addresses it, and it does indeed say that they can be recycled. I think that guidance is in error. I don't think it comports with federal law that says that anything that was used in an election has to be maintained for 22 months. I know there is consternation and debate on that. The VBS 02 and 05 both indicate that media has to be able to maintain data integrity for 22 months. So it very much seems to me that the VBS standards intended for those, if they were intended to be able to hold data for 22 months, I would think that you would be able to keep it for 22 months. So, I'm going to give you another little item. What's that?
Yeah, you're not entirely wrong there, Mike, but the VBSG are voluntary, you know, guidelines that the federal government.
Yeah, I know I mess up that.
The real guidelines come from each state. And each Secretary of State is the chief elections officer and is the one that determines, you know, how to follow the rules that the state legislature imposes. So we're always going to follow the guidance of the elections chief elections official, the Secretary of State, who's telling us, you know, this is what the law says and this is how you implement those processes. That's pretty much our answer.
I'm not afraid to take issue with him either.
If I have to choose between the interpretation of the chief elections officer of the state and someone else, I am always going to follow what the Secretary of State's office will tell us to do.
Well, I would tell you that maintaining that data would probably be more in the interest of the citizens than not maintaining that data.
Absolutely.
I mean,
we keep the sticky
notes that are put on ballot stacks in the ballot counting area, because the law says that everything has to be kept. So every sticky note that's got, you know, there's 22 ballots in this stack, gets put in a bag and kept. But we're wiping out the drives, and I'm Hyder and I disagree on that.
This is one of those policy decisions that the courts, I mean, can easily discuss when we have that workshop on the 26th, right? Do you want to?
Right, and you know that it's one of my proposals.
And add up or not. It is not necessary. It's not required by the code. All the data that's in those memory sticks is printed out in hard copy paper tapes and results that are posted on the website. There's nothing in those memory sticks that is not already public, and there's no mandate to retain them. And so it's just a matter of being fiscally conservative with the budget that we have and respectful to, you know, why would we spend $1 million on USB sticks that we don't need to? That's ultimately what it comes down to.
But I tell you what, there's another issue there,
but,
too.
But I think, you know, we're having an extensive debate here on USB sticks, and I think you had a lot of ground to cover, and I'm sorry, I just popped in.
Yeah, we do have a lot of ground to cover.
What other questions do you have? Okay, Mr. Garcia is on the line. If you got a question, pose it to him now. By the way, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. We're talking to two Republicans who have issues with the last election. Also on the phone lines right now is Hyder Garcia, who is the elections administrator here in Tarrant County. He's available to answer any questions. If you have problems or concerns about what happened with the last election on March 1st, the primary, now's the time to ask them.
And I have a question. Unless you got somebody else. What's that?
I have a question to Mr. Garcia, because it was a lot spoken regarding software, software issues, this, that, or the other. What what part do you play in the software creation for our elections systems? Do you play any part? What part do you play in it?
Zero, absolutely nothing. I haven't worked in software programming for over 6 years. Probably 10, because the last years I was in my former job, I wasn't even programming. I was a project manager. That's my specialty. When you buy elections equipment, if you're a county in Texas, you can only buy what the state has certified and approved. And those companies submit, they have to go through a two-stage process. First, they have to get a federal certification. And then after they have a federal certification, they come into the Secretary of State and they submit their source code and their documentation and their machines, and they get certified. And so when a county goes out to purchase, you can only buy from the menu, the extensive menu of only two options that the state has for you. You either buy HART or you buy Ethernet. When we did our purchase process, we wrote an RFP. We laid out clear requirements, and we put together a panel of 14 experts of elections and IT, including our IT chief security officer, our networking officer, our best people in the office to evaluate both technologies, and it was a score. It was a weight-driven score, you know, like each one of the criteria had you could score it 1 to 10, and every individual did it, and so basically that's a whole process. You cannot, when you work for the government, just go out and say, oh, that's a fancy phone, I'm buying that one. You buy what the methodology says you have to buy. You put out a set of specs, you evaluate them, you score them, and then you buy the lowest compliant bidder. It's exactly how government works. So there's no John Doe decided that he liked the fancy phone or the fancy, computers, and he bought those. There's a process that's regulated by law. State law requires regulate how you spend public funds. And so that process is public.
And
documented. Those evaluation matrices, the budget, the people involved, everything is documented there.
Hyder, in fairness, we did not have to select, for instance, a BMD system. It could have been a hybrid system like Denton bought, which would have been a good deal less expensive, I'm betting.
And that's a great point, because it's important for people to go back to the recordings of Commissioner's Court. And I believe it was somewhere in August or September 2018. And I made a presentation to the court, and I said, these are the types of equipment available. What would you like me to pursue? And the court said a hybrid system. And one of the – there were two things that I mentioned to the court, and I said this is important to consider. Number one, if we had bought what Denton County had, we would have not been able to move to vote centers. And there was a clear desire to move to vote centers and allow people to vote anywhere. Vote centers is the program that allows people on election day to vote anywhere in the county and not just in their precinct. And we knew that was a good thing for voters. More than 50% of the voters on elections vote outside their precinct because it's convenient. It has proven to be a very good thing for people to be able to participate. Back then, before SB1, and I don't remember if it was SB1 or one other bill that passed last summer, but if you had a paper-based system, you couldn't join the vote centers program. It made no sense, but it was in the law. And so we, one of the things was, if we don't go for a BMD, we can't join vote centers. The other one, and I told the court this, is with a BMD system, you have zero error in a recount process because the BMD system doesn't have to interpret if you circled an oval or if you, you know, put an arrow next to a name or if you X'd out. A BMD system, if the ballot says Mike, it will count a vote for Mike. There's no error. Every recount, every post-election recount process we've done since we bought the new system has come back with a zero error. Zero. Candidates know this. The people know this. When we recount those paper ballots, there's no error, and it's because there's no interpretation of a hand mark. And that was the other advantage I promised the court we could get out of a BMD, and it has proven to be true. I think those were the two big factors for the court saying, yes, let's go find a BMD, a hybrid system, and let's move in that direction. But that was a court decision.
And I will throw in there that a lot of what I talk about today is, you know, 2020 hindsight. The issues have been framed much differently today than they were in 2018. We understand them a lot differently. And for, let's discuss voting centers for a minute because it's an important part of the program. That is a very popular thing with the voters. I actually like the convenience of it. I do not like it from a security standpoint. There's no continuity. Tapes, this is something we can discuss in a minute too. The tapes that the judge pulls out, she or he can't match to something that is on the website. Should be
That's not true. We post on the website the results broken down per precinct and per location. It takes us a few days to do it because there's a huge workload, but you can. And I will tell you something that we have been working on since March 1st, and we're going to be the first county in Texas to do this because we are moving. We are a county that is very, very leading. You know, we're at the forefront of transparency in Texas. We are going to be the first county to scan all the election day tapes printed at the locations and put them on our website. We're about 75% done. We have gone through every envelope, pulled every tape signed by every judge, and we're scanning them, and we are going to put them on the website. No other county in Texas does that. And when they start doing it, remember that it started in Tarrant County. I should remember that. We get a lot of heat from this.
Hyder and I have had that conversation before. And I am enthused about that because that is a step towards transparency. We're not there yet, and that is a step that we have not had available, and we do not have available right now. There is a holding place on the website for it. And Hyder, I would have asked this question today if I could have gotten down there. My understanding, and you know, you have an open records request from me on this subject. But my understanding is that you had two watchers request to see the tapes from early voting, and they weren't available. Why were they not available for watchers to see, and when and if have they been pulled? And you know that my request on that is very complicated.
Yeah, the early voting tape. We have an obligation per the elections code to make sure that results are not disclosed before the close of polls on election day. And early voting ends on Friday before the election day. So if we print those tapes on the Friday before, there's an issue there. How do we protect those results from leaking and getting out? And furthermore, with SB1, if a watcher is in the room and says, I would demand to see those tapes, and we say no, we are obstructing them, we're committing a felony. So we are in a legal trap here between printing them and not printing them, because we have to protect them, but we can't refuse to disclose them. That's why those tapes are not printed. Now, results per location of early voting are on the website. Once those drives are pulled by the ballot board judge and read into the system, the reports were produced and posted on the website, and there are tapes. We are in conversations with the Secretary of State, and we've told him we have concerns with this, and we understand that people want tapes there too. We need you to find a protocol for us. I've told the state, if you give me in writing protection against, quote unquote, obstructing a watcher because I printed a tape but I cannot show it, I will print those tapes. But the problem I have, and I've told you this in person, I've told all the watchers that have been there, is if I print those tapes and you simply say, I want to see that result, I have to pick the lesser of two evils, disclosing results when I'm not supposed to or refusing to show them when I'm not supposed to obstruct a watcher. So the only way to protect myself and my staff is for those tapes to be printed after the fact, and those are the ones that are on the website. That has to be a legislative fix, or at the very least, an administrative rule changed by the SOS, and they're working on that. If they do it, those things will be starting to be printed in May, but they have to fix it. Not a, we cannot change.
And one thing to understand is that they have the capability in the precinct to, there's nothing that stops them from printing them in the precinct. And in fact, I watched on Friday night, the close down procedure
right.
at Mansfield,
not,
and the guy pulled the tape, and I thought that was normal.
Right, but there's a lot to talk about in this little time. But the point is, this is not a technical issue. This is a procedural legislative issue that has to be fixed by the SOS and the state for us to say we're no longer in a death trap here, and we can proceed in printing this. That's it.
Yeah, and understand that I beat him up too.
Yeah.
I don't just pick on Mr. Garcia.
And I see Mike most every day. Mike takes my calls. I don't know if the other two gentlemen want to ask
questions. I'm sorry, we got three people talking.
Yeah.
What did you say, Hyder?
I said I'm only talking to Mike here, but I know there's other people in line. I don't see any of the other two gentlemen want to ask questions.
Yes, please jump in.
I do. Hyder, good evening. Yeah, Jeff Marshall here. Hyder, good evening. Thank you for joining. Would you facilitate a meeting with the Secretary of State, myself, a couple other folks that have been working for a couple of years on election integrity, would you facilitate a meeting with all of us to address these issues? Like you and I spoke face-to-face at the Elks Lodge, I believe there's a reconciliation that can be achieved if we can all get together. Now, I've reached out to the Secretary of State and tried to get in front of him personally. I cannot. Would you be willing to do that?
Well, what I'll say is we have, Tarrant County has understood that there's a desire to talk about elections. And when a lot of your people from your watchers, including Mike, started going to court, the procedure in court is, you have 3 minutes to talk. And I was the one who approached him and told him, you have to ask the court to put an item on agenda so you can actually have a conversation. Until you ask them for an item on agenda, until something's put there, everyone's going to be legally limited to you have 3 minutes to talk, and then we can't answer, and then that's it. So I want you to understand that there's actually proactivity from my end in helping that meeting on April 26 happen so that there can be a conversation, so that there's no, we legally can't answer to this. This whole process is Tarrant County saying, let's talk. And I am working right now on trying to get the Secretary of State to have a representative in that court session so the dialogue can be there. Those are the things I can tell you that we are doing to try to facilitate this. Hey, there has to be a conversation. Those are facts. Those
again,
are real things that are going to happen.
And
often, they're going to happen because we're helping them happen.
Hyder, what I'm talking about is an off-the-record, out-of-the-court conversation. Let's meet in a conference room. I happen to know John Scott lives here in Tarrant County.
So Jeff, the only thing I'll say is we're talking about transparency, but then you say we should off the record in a boardroom. Let's talk.
Let's
have a meeting there and say here are the problems we have, and here's the elections.
I'm talking about a conversation that is unencumbered by the rules of the court. Let's put a video camera in there and let's record it. I'm talking about an unencumbered talk with all of us. We can record it for transparency to address these issues where we're not limited by time or rules of the court.
I mean, what I can tell you right now is the first attempt is going to happen on the 26th. It's Commissioner's Court. It's a public event. Everyone can go. You can go.
That's not an answer to my question.
It's live.
That's not an answer to my question. not an answer to
my
question.
I'm telling you, this is the first try we're going to do to get there, and then we'll see what happens on the 26th and how productive that conversation is and where we go. I think that's the first step, right?
No, I don't agree with that at all. I think a conversation, just like I'm talking about, with the people that have been working around the election issues for the last 2 years, okay, yourself, the Secretary of State, whoever, in an unencumbered conversation to put all of these issues on the table, A through Z, and address them.
How is that not what's happening on 26th, Jeff?
Literally, it's going to be limited by time. It's going to be limited by time and rules of the court. Hyder, these issues, as well as I do, are so varied and so wide. This is, and I'm probably saying a convention. Let's do it over a weekend. This is not the complexities are so large that this is not a 1 day, 1 hour, may even not be a 1 week conversation. But I believe we can get to a point if we're not encumbered by time and rules of the court, where we can iron all of these things out.
I ask the court to do that day and say, how do we build this process? And then we'll take it from there. I think you'll have the full attention.
I've got something that's along that line that I have not proposed yet, but somebody else gave me an idea. It wasn't my idea, but somebody else gave me an idea that I'm going to try and flesh out, and that I'll propose for then. One of the things that's very frustrating, Hyder, and you're correct that speaking for 3 minutes, now sometimes that's a tactical decision to do things that way, but I have been asking for that meeting since December. The documents that you have seen that I have proposed,
You asked for that meeting because I told you, ask them for an item commissioner's court so you don't have limitations.
Yeah, and I've been working on that since December, and it took until April to get that done. But I made my first request of Judge Whitley. It was sometime in December. I mean, the tapes are there. You know, I would like to sit down and talk to you and see if we can get some items put on the agenda. I made that request in December, and it's taking us until April to get it done. I'll take progress, but you know, it sure took a long time to get there.
There was just a bit of a thing to deal with called a primary election, Mike. Like, we are making
I understand.
You know, I want you to understand
some of it. I understand some of it. I don't.
On the Tuesday of early voting, it's going to be the second day of early voting of the municipal election, and I'm going to be dedicating the entire morning, possibly the entire day, to this. That's how committed we are to. We've got to do this, and we've got to open this dialogue, and we want to move forward, and we want to make things better, and we want to make them public. So, I mean, it's the little things, right, that show the intent that we're trying to have here, to say we need to do this, and we need to move forward. Thanks.
Hyder, let me ask you a question. How many disenfranchised voters did we have in this election?
How many what?
How many disenfranchised voters did we have in this election?
I don't have a number in front of me, but they were not statistically above the usual breakage we have. You always have, I mean, when you deploy 2,000 pieces of equipment, you've always got one or two that have an issue. You've always got a paper jam. I mean, that's just the numbers. Tarrant County is not a small county in Texas.
Do you know a specific number? Do you have
operation? We're talking about 192 locations. We're talking about 2,000 poll workers. We're talking about probably 3,000 pieces of equipment, maybe 5 if I add in there the poll books and the controllers and every single little gadget that we throw out there. I mean, these are massive numbers. These are huge numbers.
Massive numbers with
massive complexity. I understand that when we talk about, hey, 2 duels failed or 3 failed, and I look at them and I say, well, that's 0.1% of the 3,000.
It wasn't 2 or
and
3.
And believe
me,
when I hear someone says, hey, I got there and the duel was down, and, you know, and by the way, when a duel fails, for people to understand, a duel is one of the terminals where you vote. So if there are 12
How
in
many
that room,
duos
one
failed
down,
during the primary?
I don't have a number in front of me, Jeff. I was having dinner.
You have a rough guesstimation.
But we can have those numbers. We'll bring them on the 26th, and we'll talk about failure rate, and we'll talk about those things.
Let me ask a question. Let me jump in for a second. Mr. Garcia, when you hear people saying the words recount or redo the election, what is your response to that?
I think, you know, there's no one who would enjoy, quote-unquote, and I'll tell you why the quote-unquote, more a recount than me. Because, like I said, every time a recount is done, the result comes back to say it added up identical to the tally. And I say quote-unquote because, yeah, well, we're the ones who have to find the boxes and do the sorting and find the ballots, and it's a lot of work. But it's a lot of work that has been proving consistently, time after time, the precision and the integrity of the counts. I have no doubt, there's not a hair in my body that has any doubt that those results posted reflect exactly what the people who showed up to vote voted.
So when people,
I want to throw something in here. Understand that a little bit ago that I specified that.
Mr. Bush, let me finish my point. So when people say they want to see the paper ballot versus what happened with the machine, when you say a recount, is that what would take place, or are we talking about some other type of method?
So, you know, obviously, I mean, again, like I said, every time we've recounted, if I could, I would just, you know, let's open every box and count everything again. But it's state law. There's state law there governing who can ask for a recount, when a recount can be done, when it has to be filed, what are the conditions. It's not something we can do. There is law that says we have to keep those boxes untouched in any unauthorized access. I believe it's a misdemeanor. So if I open a box just because I want to prove how great things are, I'm actually committing a crime. There is a process, and this is a lot of what we're going to talk about in that commissioner's court meeting. We have to follow the rules. I don't get to choose which rules or which code sections I like. I have to follow them all, even the ones that prevent me from proving how good things are. So if you want a recount
or how bad
of every 100% all the time, you have to tell the legislature to build in language in the code that allows for that to happen. There is no other option. Legally, we are bound to this.
Okay. And one of the things I want to throw in there is, and I don't know whether you heard this part of the conversation or not, Hyder, but when the term recount came up a little bit ago, I specified that no, recount wasn't what I was looking for. It's a little bit different. I want the ability to more audit. I want to be able to look into the databases. I want to be able to see all the source documents. So I want to be able to, and I'm going to give you some examples here, and you know we've had these discussions, and they're on the agenda for the 26th, is I want the ballot images. And there are still problems with ballot images. But I want the ballot images turned on and captured, not capturing them. Mm-hmm. There is a reason we should not be able to go traipsing through the actual ballots themselves, and I understand that. But this is 2022. We could be capturing images of those ballots, and there's no reason that those ballots can't be. And there are issues here, and we are dealing with those issues.
Because I want,
but
I want to make
you
sure
have
people
selected not to capture those.
Let me say this.
You have elected not to capture those.
Listen, I want everybody to hear this. You and I have talked about it privately, and I'm going to say it again now on the radio.
Okay.
We cannot legally release those images and give access to the paper ballots. That's not for us to change.
Okay.
For the legislature to change. And I've told you, and I'll say it, everyone on this call, if you want to find a sponsor for a bill that says paper ballots are public, ballot images are public, I will go with you hand in hand to the Capitol and say, I'm here to support that bill. Those ballot images should be public. I have no problem if they're public. I don't
actually
care
one
public. In fact, Hyder, I
128.001 says that they should be, that they are exempt from 66058, and 125.064 says
that
anything,
and you know that,
and
that
for the AG's
so
decision,
that.
I have no, that before
that
the AG
so
right now.
You to say because that's counsel. And that's the Secretary of State saying those images are part of the confidential protection.
That issue is before the Attorney General right now.
And we'll ask them. We'll ask the legal director of Secretary of State if we can get him to be there. Is this true or not? Is this legal or not? Where are you on this? And they'll confirm or not.
We're going to have that answer by the 19th, I hope.
But again, and let me make it clear, those should be, and I actually sent Mike a sample. He didn't know that this existed. Go to the San Francisco Board of Elections. They post
every image
of every ballot and every
That is true. He did.
You can actually go and print them all. And I told him, this is wonderful. We should do – I'm all in for doing something like this. Here's a real-life example of it. You can actually share it with lawmakers and say, look at this, how cool it is. So we – again, I've been trying to give him tools to advocate for the things that we share, and this is one of those that we have in common. But until the law changes, again, I cannot choose to say, oh, I'm going to ignore this law because, you know, help me score some points with people. It's not how it works.
I'm very versed on that, and I'm working on it.
Good.
Mr. Gardner,
I have a question in the general law statement.
Okay, go ahead, Trevor. Trevor, can you finish your statement?
I mean, you know, the consensus, in Tarrant County, and I talked to a lot of people, you know, saying it's crazy. And, and at this point in time, you know, where we stand as a community and as a county, you know, we're to the point like, you know, there's no faith and trust in our elections, you know, especially with you being a heart in your civic board, which we've seen on the site, and, you know, and you being one of the main people with heart in your civic, and then, you know, bringing the machines in.
What do you mean by me being one of the main people with heart in your civic? What exactly?
You're on the board.
I'm not on the board. I have nothing to do with them. I've never worked with them. I have nothing to do with them.
What?
So
we've seen it was on the site.
Zero,
you were on there.
Zero. I have no role in Hardin or Civic. I have nothing to do with
them. I would
there,
be
like,
surprised if he was. I would
zero.
Be surprised if that was the case.
Who's this? Is this Mr. Bucher?
Yeah.
You realize how easy it would be to put me in jail if I were a member of the Hardin or Civic Board for conflict of interest for buying their own equipment. I have no relationship or connection to them.
I have the screenshot of you being on their site.
Nope. So, okay, so what was the rest of the question?
Okay, another question is, since we're at this point, and we all have no faith, and we will not rest until there is integrity back and faith back, and everybody is calling for you to step down. And if you cared about this county the way we do, this is what we really want.
There is absolutely no reason for me to do. The fact that you are not getting, you know, the system, the fact that you're not, I mean, the fact that you even have these basic confusions. Mr. Bucher, you were in court saying that we were breaking the law because we were stamping the early voting clerk's initials, my initials, on the early voting ballots. That's a requirement of the code. I think you really need to go back and check the requirements of the code to understand, because sometimes you have issues with things that you believe are not in the code, and then they turn out to be. That's there. You went to court.
That wasn't me that was the one to ask that. I know the individual that asked that. That wasn't me.
Sections and say, read the code. The code says we have to do this. In fact, if we don't, then we have to do it. So, no. I have no
I wasn't the one that asked that. It wasn't me that did that. I know who the person was that asked that one.
I'll send you the video.
You're just mad because I'm calling you to the court. We're not going to have no rest until you're gone. That's just the way it is.
Okay, so hang on here. Hyder, this is an olive branch, and I mean this with all due respect. You know, I've met face to face. You're the smartest guy in the room. I'm not confused about that. You know what the problems are. You know what everybody around Tarrant County has been complaining about and suspect of. You, being the smartest guy in the room around the voting system itself, around the legislation, around the laws, okay, it is beyond, it's you being the smartest guy around all that stuff, knowing what the problem is, you also know what the solutions are. I've heard you mention some of those solutions here this evening. Okay, Jeff, Mike, whoever, go to the legislature and change the laws. You already know what needs to be changed to address the issues and concerns of the electorate of Tarrant County. Why have you not done that? Why have you not been at the forefront? Why have you not been the tip of the spear of addressing these issues and complexities that we are dumbfounded about because we're not as intelligent as you around the system and as around the laws? Why have you not spearheaded? You know what? Not why. Will you Will you spearhead? Will you tell us what we need to do to get changed to satisfy our concerns?
Your concern, I mean, every time you bring concerns, I tell you, when the reason for your concern is a requirement of the code. I'm not a politician. I don't do politics. I don't tell legislatures what to put in the laws. It's not my place. I follow the law, whatever they write.
But
and so when someone says,
problem.
I don't like this law, because you just had someone on the phone who is saying he likes the system and he's good with it. So I don't get involved in, oh, I want to change this law, I want to keep it. I just tell you guys,
what?
The reason we're doing this is because there is a law for it. If you want to go work with your state rep to do a change, that's on you. I don't have to go out
will
there and tell them
you
what to put in. It's not my job to get involved in the politics of it. It's
will
not. It's a disrespect
facilitate?
To my office and to my staff and to everyone who's involved in elections. We don't do politics.
Okay, we'll do the politics, but will you facilitate knowing what it is that we, the electorate, want? Will you facilitate in helping us? Will you write a list of things that we need to ask the legislature to get the things that we want so that we can restore the confidence of the electorate in our system? I will say this about the HART system. I voted on that.
That's
system.
Not for me
I
to
found
do.
It
that's
easy.
Not for me to
I
do
found
that.
It simple.
That's not for me to
what
do
I
that.
Jeff,
mean,
I'm already
do.
On that, but right now I'm dealing with the commissioner's court because the commissioner's court is the first step and the legislature is not in session. Trust me, there's going to be a whole long list of things that's going to go to the legislature real soon,
right.
too. They're going to get to know me, too. They're going to love me just like Hyder does.
When I run into lawmakers and they ask me, I tell them, this is what I think. This is what we do. This is what the law says. And they've asked me, well, what if we do this? Well, then you would have to change this code to do that. But it's not our job to go advocate for one law. That's my personal opinion. I don't even vote in primaries out of respect for the people I serve as an elections administrator, so nobody knows if I'm a Republican or a Democrat.
Yeah, we do.
I don't get involved in politics, and I never will, as long as I'm an administrator.
Okay. Will you get involved in the solution? I'll get involved
sure,
in
we
the
can
politics.
Have a discussion.
Will you help me with the solution?
That's what the 26 is about. That's what the 26 is about. It's about
I am
saying,
asking
here
for
the
something
potential
substantially.
Bring here.
Okay, we got to get out of here. What we're going to do is take final comments, and then we're going to close out. So, Mr. Garcia, we're going to start with you. Do you have any final comments?
So I think there's obviously a lot of, rumors and misinformation and facts and stuff floating around the Internet. Again, we just had a quick sample here, right? I'm not a member of any board of any company or anything like that. When Mike wants to stay in the office an extra 2 hours watching a test, I don't make a dime out of it. I stay there because I care about being transparent about showing stuff. So I've always said the same thing. If you have questions about elections, go to the people who do elections. Go to your local elections administrator. Go to the Secretary of State's office. We are the people who are going to tell you how things actually work. There's a lot of people out there gaining notoriety and probably even profiting up of, promoting all these fake rumors and theories, and come to us and show us. We have done tremendous progress. When this whole website to check where you voted, election integrity, Tarrant County thing started, we went ahead and we said, let's put the voter history. Now you can look up your own voter history on our website. We put in a mail ballot tracker. We gave Tarrant County a paper trail for early voting, which we did not have with the previous system. And let me tell you something. In 2020, 80% of the people that voted in Tarrant County voted in early voting. If we had not switched to the system we did, that would have been electronic voting. Your votes in 2020 would have been a blind act of faith on a computer. We have a paper trail because of the decision we made, and we can audit that election because of the decision we made. We have added polling place tapes to the website. We have added location results. We are moving towards, every time we run into a concern, we say, okay, we may not be able to do this now, but let's see how we do it to keep moving forward and pushing for transparency. We were the first county to do the signature comparison report for the organizations that were looking for ballot harvesting and fraud and all of that. And we said, how do we make it easier for you guys so you don't have to pay thousands of dollars in copies? We work with people to make things happen and to make sure facts, accurate facts, are out there. And so my only message is, come to us, get facts, and careful with what you read on the Internet or on Telegram. It's not a lot of that. A lot of it is intended to keep a fight that is not necessary going on. We talk about disenfranchising voters and people not having trust. A lot of the people that are fed up because they get these misinformation tweets and facts and Telegram messages. And I've sent that with people, and I go, let's go through this one by one. I had the guy the other day saying to me, tell me something about turnout, and I said, let's open the website. Look at the real numbers out there. They don't match the thing you picked up on Twitter. Oh, I didn't know that. Well, it's there, and it's public information. Come to us. Let us show you the truth. Doesn't mean we have to agree, and that's a lot of what Mike and I have talked about many times. We can agree to disagree, but there's a difference between not liking a policy and saying that there's fraud or manipulation or, you know, as someone called me, someone went up on the last meeting and called me, what was it, a California Marxist. That doesn't get us anywhere. That doesn't prove anything. That doesn't help in anything. What helps is to say what I hope we can do in the 26th. Here's this theory. Here's this fact. Let's walk through it, and let me show you the truth. Be in Commissioner's Court on the 26th. That's my message.
Thank you, Mr. Hyden, for calling in tonight. Thank you so much. Enjoyed your input. Mr. Marshall, a final thought.
Yes. My final thought. I want to thank Mr. Garcia for coming to the call and being in the field of fire. He's very good at it. The implications made by the final remarks that there are not substantial problems within the system are just factually incorrect from my standpoint and the facts that I have. I asked specifically for help. I have, during my campaign process, I was all around 19 cities, the entire county, campaigning, meeting many different factions and groups that are working on election integrity. They all have the same questions, the same concerns. Having been in each one of those groups individually, understand them individually, I see a path to reconcile and restore faith in our election system by the method that I just proposed to Mr. Hyder, and that is maybe a weekend convention with the Secretary of State, Mr. Hyder, several of the people that are educated around the election system to address the concerns of the electorate of Tarrant County. And you heard the response. Come to Commissioner's Court. One day in Commissioner's Court, 1 week in Commissioner's Court, 30 days in Commissioner's Court is not going to resolve and restore the faith in the election system to the Tarrant County electorate. Not going to happen. Woefully insufficient. By Mr. Garcia's words himself, the complexities of the system and the laws written around this system are woefully, woefully deficient. They are deficient to the confidence and integrity for the voter. If we had the ability to touch these ballots, to look at these records, et cetera, this is what everybody screams in unison. We don't have the ability to balance the checkbook. Let me balance my checkbook and see where my money's at, and I will shut my mouth. We cannot do this. This is what we're calling for. This is what we're asking for. Specifically to this primary, there were many, many, many failures. I asked specifically how many disenfranchised voters. We didn't know the answer to that. I myself own 5 corporations. I can tell you everything that's going on in every single one of my corporations down to the dollar. I'm surprised that we don't know that information off the top of our head, how many disenfranchised voters there are. In closing, I will say I still stand where I started. The number of disenfranchised voters in Tarrant County due to the failure of the systems, and I'm talking about process, procedure, training, tabulators, testing, servers, and duos, is so substantial that the Secretary of State should step in right now, remove the investigative team working on the 2020 general election, and put them right in the middle of this system right now. When we get to November and we have three or four times as many voters as we have in this primary, and if we have the kind of systems failures that we had in the primary, I can't even imagine. I can't wrap my mind around what's going to happen. How are we going to reconcile that when we can't even reconcile 152,000 Republican votes?
Wow. Mr. Brewster,
this
final comment.
That's a problem.
First of all, I appreciate Mr. Garcia coming on. He didn't have to do this, and he actually goes out and he spends a lot of time. I've been in the office and talked to him on a number of occasions. Mr. Garcia and I disagree on several things. There's no doubt about that. Some of them I think are in his purview. Some of them aren't. And when they're not in his purview, I push him till I find where it is, and I go work on that. And I'm working on things in a number of different areas right now. By the fall, I'll be working with people in legislature. You know, you don't know who the full slate of your legislatures are going to be right now. But, I think that all of this is not necessarily Mr. Garcia's fault, but he is the one that runs the department. But there's a lot of obscurity in the system, and I'm not satisfied with it, and I won't be satisfied with it until I can pop the top and see most everything inside of it. And I'm working for that. I want very clear, direct, simple processes and a very, very open system. And I understand that people haven't been asking for that for years, but we are now. And but again, I appreciate everybody being involved. Mr. Sutton, who I don't know whether he's still listening or not, but I met with him today. Yes. He and I will disagree on things, but he and I found things that we liked too. So there's always that. But I think we've got things here that need to be addressed, and we're working on it. It needs to be addressed. Yeah, we need to address some things. So.
Wonderful. Thank you to Jeff Marshall and Mike Brewster for being my guest tonight, and thank you to Hyder Garcia with the Tarrant County Election for coming and chiming in on the topic tonight. Thank you, the audience, for listening tonight. It's campaign season. Listen, if you have a campaign and you'd like to run your ads here on Let's Talk Fort Worth, please send me a line at letstalkfortworth@aol.com, and let's talk about getting your ads run right here on Let's Talk Fort Worth. Listen, we are way over time tonight, but again, thank you for listening tonight. We'll see you next week, same time, same bad channel. Good night.
Take care.
Good night.